Welcome to the Princeton LaxCast. I'm Jerry Price. I'm here with Princeton men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon. Coach, welcome.
Glad to be back.
So, Coach, we've got two things we've got to start with before we get to the Ivy League tournament scenarios and the game coming up against Cornell this weekend and how Princeton did last weekend against Harvard. The first two things are, one, somebody tweeted that I talk too much. What do you think of that?
I saw that, too. It made me chuckle. I think this is a wonderful exchange back and forth, and you are an outstanding statistician, so it only makes sense to be able to roll those stats out. So, I think this has been wonderful.
I'm afraid to say anything now. Not really. Well, so
No, you got to carry the weight here.
So, you know, the guy, I appreciate any kind of feedback, and he tweeted it, or she tweeted it, to Princeton, to Tiger Lacrosse, and retweeted it, and it's interesting to see the things that people take away from our little conversations there. But, you know, the podcasts are supposed to be conversational. I mean, that's what Courtney and I do on that one, and I think we do okay. I've tried to talk over you less, and I think I've been successful in recent weeks.
I think we're doing fine. I think it's pretty fun to be down here doing these. So,
and then the other one, the other topic is Cookie Krongard, who is being honored this weekend. And you know, just talk a little bit about him. Before you do, let me ask you this question. Maybe 45 years from now, you jumping in cage at the alumni game?
I have retired completely from ever playing goalie. I don't know how Cookie continues to get hit with that ball and hold his ground. He's a really impressive guy. I met Cookie, I'd say about a decade ago for the first time. Him and Jesse Hubbard were training on the Stevens Institute of Technology fields up in Hoboken, New Jersey. I think they were both playing for the New Jersey Pride at that time. And I had the opportunity to go out. We didn't know each other. We didn't know we would then again meet down the road. But it was just nice to see him. I was curious to who this nutty old guy was out there stepping in front of Jesse Hubbard's shots. It was really impressive. And then he's just done so much for our program. He does such a good job being around our team, helping our guys out, sharing perspective, just being really dialed in. He's a lifer in terms of the alumni game. He takes it seriously, and it's important to us.
The goal, but what he does, he's closing in on 80. If he's not already 80, he's somewhere around 80. I think he's still in the 70s. But I mean, he's not a kid.
I mean, no, he's and he takes it. I mean, I remember my first alumni game. Here, Tom Schreiber splits over the top, lets one fly. I think it catches him right in the throat guard or right in the chest. And I think everyone kind of held their breath for a minute, and then Cookie wasn't even fazed. Quick outlet and on with the game.
So what he does is, you know, so he goes in to play goalies. And at the alumni game, you know, there's a rotation of goalies. So, like, you know, Tyler Fiorito is playing for a little while, and, you know, Patrick Cairns is playing for a little while. Now Cookie jumps in, and everybody immediately starts to take it easy for the first, like, two shots. And then they either forget he's in goal or they just are like, whatever, I'm going to – I mean, nobody holds off. I mean, they're shooting as hard as they can. And he's making saves. I mean, he's giving up goals, but he's making saves. He's outletting the ball. He's trying to run with it. I mean, for starters, what kind of physical shape do you have to be in to do that?
It's pretty special to watch. And we get an incredible long line of goalies here at Princeton that come back and play. But – he does a great job, man. He's able to move. He holds his own. He holds his pipe. He's dialed into his positioning. He loves talking about it. It's really funny stuff. He does a great job, though.
And so talk a little bit about who he is and why Princeton Lacrosse is honoring him.
Well, Cookie's been so helpful. I mean, just, you know, out from the peripheral support of just helping our guys with advice and career mentorship. But Cookie's actually, he's naming our locker room down at 52. We're going to recognize it in his honor, and you know, he's been so generous and grateful, you know, so generous to the program. We're so grateful for it. So we're just excited to have him around our team. We're excited to be able to remember him in this way, and you know, it's just incredible.
So the on-field lacrosse piece, as Cookie will be honored at halftime, but the on-field lacrosse piece is Princeton and Cornell. That's a 1 o'clock start on Saturday. Princeton staying alive in its quest to try to get into the Ivy League tournament by beating Harvard last week. Very good performance by a lot of players. Very good win over Harvard, a team that's also playing to try to get into the Ivy League tournament. So it's a huge game for both teams. And it sets up a situation this weekend where, in some ways, it might not matter what Princeton does in its game, because if Yale beats Harvard, and that game's at noon, and if Dartmouth beats Brown, Princeton's in the Ivy League tournament, regardless of who wins Princeton-Cornell. not that you're going to not care who wins Princeton Cornell, but on the other hand, if Princeton beats Cornell but Brown beats Dartmouth, Princeton is eliminated. So it's a strange situation to be in, where there's scenarios where you can win and be out, lose and be in. But I would think that none of that really matters. You're just getting ready to play a very good team and your biggest rival. And I think that, you know, you're probably not really caring at all until after the game where the pieces fall.
You're spot on. You can't worry about it. I've said it almost every week, control the controllable. You know, unfortunately, we didn't handle our business earlier in the year and earlier in Ivy in conference play. So I think that, you know, when you drop a few games and, you know, you miss out opportunities to execute and take advantage of games earlier in the year, you know, you can find yourself in these positions where you've got to rely on other teams and other programs to make things happen for you. So, you know, not an ideal situation for us, but no, our focus is entirely on Cornell. It's a top five, top 10 team that's coming into 52. It's our senior day, an incredible senior class. And, you know, we're looking forward to putting out a great performance. I think we're playing pretty well right now. We're looking forward to Saturday.
So let's go back to the Harvard game for a minute. And, you know, Sauer's his usual goal, six assists, and, you know, Sims has a big game, and Brown has a big game, and, you know, everybody, all the usual suspects, Blaisdell makes 18 saves. But the real, I think, key moment of the game came, you know, Princeton had, I think it was a four-goal lead. Harvard scored three in a row, had the momentum, and had a two-minute non-releasable penalty, and then got another penalty. Princeton committed another penalty by Blaisdell, which left for 46 seconds, left Harvard two men up, and here comes John Levine off the bench to play goal because Blaisdell has to come out of the game. And he makes two big-time saves to keep Princeton in the lead, and then Princeton comes down and scores a few of its own and pulls away. But like, that's a key minute. Harvard ties that game up. It still has, you know, more non-releasable time. You know, who knows what might happen there. Well, so two things. One is, you know, just talk a little bit about Levine and coming in and making those plays, but also from the perspective of being a goalie. Have you ever been in that situation where you have to, where you were the backup and had to come in because the starter committed a penalty and now you're thrown into playing? And what's that like? You weren't a backup very long.
No, but I have experienced that. It's a really funny thing to come into a game with a heck of a lot of pressure on you with no warm-up whatsoever. You've been kind of standing there, you know, watching your fellow goalie do really well up to this point. You know, you probably think, hey, I'm not getting in the game anytime soon. And then you see the penalty happen, and John just went in, and you kind of just rely on your habits and rely on your training, and did a really nice job. He held high on a near side fake on a one-on-one. And
with Kyle Anderson.
It's really fun.
Yeah, that's 34 goals.
You know, you picked up on it immediately in terms of the headline, you know, in terms of the press release, but and that's the goalie blood you now have in your family. But when it comes down to it, no, we were thrilled. I mean, look, you know, we preach next man up in our locker room all the time, and everyone's got a job and everyone's got a role. And John's role was to be our backup goalie for that Harvard game, and he needed to be ready at a moment's call, and he did just that. So we were really proud of him. Our team was really proud of him. We actually honored him with our game ball after the game, and it was a pretty good eruption in the locker room.
So there was, you know, so the flag is thrown. It was clearly a penalty on Blaisdell, but then Harvard possessed the ball for maybe like 30 more seconds, 15 to 30 more seconds before they shot, turned it over, you know, not turned it over, but play stopped, they came, they called the penalty. So by the time they threw the flag until he actually went on the field, it was probably like a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And one thing I did notice is that as soon as the flag flew, he started getting loose on the side. Like, you know, I don't know.
That's just a really savvy play by John. I think we're all at our fingers crossed. We're like, no, there's no way Blaisdell could be getting a penalty. And then you go back and watch the tape, and it was clearly a penalty.
Wasn't sure it was a cross check. Thought it might be a hold, but either
yeah,
way.
I mean, look, we there were some tough calls that game, but there are every game.
But it's, you know, it's like you can liken it to being a pitcher who comes in. You know, if the starting pitcher gets ejected, you don't get to warm up. But like, you know, or a quarterback who has to run off the sideline. But the difference is that, you know, there's really very few scenarios in baseball where a pitcher goes in and doesn't get to warm up. And in football, when you run off the sideline with your second-string quarterback, is usually the only time you'll do that is because your starter just got hurt. Even if it's like third and 15, unless it's like, you know, the fourth quarter and you need to, you know, you're just going to hand the ball off and let the guy come off the field and, like, you know, get loose a little bit. In this situation, you have to run out there and play, and you're, you know, not only are you just being thrown in with no warm-up, you're being thrown in with no warm-up with a team that has all the momentum in the world.
I think we probably could have called a timeout on him, or a timeout, you know, looking in hindsight, give him a minute to warm up. But, you know, you're going to see a
shot. But you can't. You can't do that. Because
it's a man down situation. No, you can't waste the timeout at that point.
Right, because it's, you know, there's a long way to go in the game, and you don't know when you're going to need those timeouts. And I think that's the lesson from the whole season. So
absolutely right. No, it's it takes a unique mentality, you know, to be a backup goalie. You know, you're a guy that has to prepare every week, you know, for that opportunity. You know, and then you start the game, and, you know, there aren't, we're in a sport, you know, where the backup goalie doesn't go in a lot. You know, it's outside of an injury or your starter not performing well, which all coaching staffs hope is rare. You know, you're not often going down your depth chart goaltending wise. That's a position that if you get it right, you know, you can hold on to one guy for 3 or 4 years if you need be. So just really, it's a testament to all the work John does after practice, you know, how dialed in he is to shooting tendencies, to scouting reports, to our defensive philosophies and systems. So I think John was just rewarded for all the hard work he does. So it was really nice, and we were the beneficiaries of it.
So this weekend it's Princeton and Cornell, and that's the best rivalry in Ivy League lacrosse history by far. It would take decades for anybody to catch up to what Princeton and Cornell have already done in terms of the history of the sport within the league. Cornell is, you know, they've turned things around quickly. A lot of people make it Jeff Teat versus Michael Sauer. It's not really fair because Teat's not going against Sauer. He's going against Princeton's defense, and Sauer's going against their defense. But, you know, Teat and Sauer's, barring injury, will, and, you know, if they continue at their current pace, they'll be 1-2 all-time in scoring in the history of the Ivy League by a wide margin. And they'll be in the top 10 all-time in Division I in scoring. You know, and they've come along at the same time. They're basically the same size, which is small. One of them was the leading scorer on the Canadian team at the U19 championships. The other was the leading scorer on the American team at the U19 championships. You know, I don't even know if they know each other, but the similarities between them, they're feeders who can score a lot anyway, elevate their teams considerably. I mean, I just think it's going to be such a treat just to watch them play against each other, not directly against each other, but have like whichever end of the field the ball is at, one of them is going to be there.
It really is. I mean, not fair at all to compare it to, say, a Michael Sauer versus Jeff Teat matchup, and there's no need, you know, we would never, you know, that's nothing ever we would ever address, but these are two incredible young players, so to be able to watch them down in 52 it'll be wonderful. I mean, you know, Michael Sauers, you know, you guys, you know, Tiger Faithful know what he does week in and week out. Jeff Teat's a really, really impressive player, and he, you know, he stirs the drink for Cornell. I mean, his vision's incredible. He's got good speed, good athleticism. He's a really selfless player, you know. So it'll, both those young guys, I mean, you know, in terms of the stats you rolled out earlier about, you know, being top of the Ivy League and top 10 in Division I.
Well, this year, I mean, right now, Teat is number one in points per game. Sauers is number two, basically less than 1 point, like a fraction of a point behind him. The opposite is true in assists. Sauers is ahead of Teat, but they're 1-2. And what I always say, what I've been saying about them is, if you're a Princeton fan, you think Teat is overrated. If you're a Cornell fan, you think Sauers is overrated. And if you flip-flop them and they were the exact same player, but Teat was here and Sauers was there, all the Cornell fans would think Sauers is better. And yeah. Teat, you know, it's just however, whatever your perspective is, but if you objectively look at that, which is hard to do if you're Princeton or Cornell, I mean, they're extraordinary players. And beyond that, if you think of all of the players who've ever played in the Ivy League, like, they're doing things nobody's ever done before.
They're two extraordinary players. They're both impressive young guys, and they've got a lot of great lacrosse ahead of them.
But it's also not just the two of them. So Cornell, their goalie has played very well all year. You know, they have a bunch of scorers. They have some young guys that they've mixed in. Princeton, you know, I think people have found their roles. I think Princeton's really on a roll. Both teams are playing well. I haven't really looked at the last time Cornell has lost, but I don't think either team has lost in April. Cornell has like a long winning streak, but I don't know like the actual last date that they lost a game. But I don't think either team has lost in April. And Cornell is playing for they're the 2 seed in the Ivy tournament. But if Harvard beats Yale, Cornell can get a share of the Ivy title. But beyond that, if they lose to Princeton, it probably kills them in terms of getting a home game in the first round of the NCAA tournament. I mean, I think they're looking to play at home in the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot on the line for them and for Princeton. And you know, I just think it shapes up as a game similar to last year, which was, you know, 18-17, and if it's another 18-17 one, I think people are going to be pretty entertained.
Yeah, it's going to, I mean, look, it's an incredible rivalry. It's going to be a great matchup. We're really looking forward to it. I think that, you know, Cornell is playing well. You know, they're a team that outside of Teat has great complementary players. They've got good goalie play, good faceoff play. So they're just doing a nice job. Coach Milliman, who was here, you know, for a short stint as a coach, is doing a great job up there. He's got his team playing well. He's got his team playing loose and, you know, their efficiency offensively. And they're just doing a really nice job. And, you know, as you stated, for our guys, you know, we've got some young guys stepping up and playing well at the right times. And, you know, our systems are kind of solidified themselves and we're kind of sinking in right now and hoping we can take care of business and, you know, get a little help and make a run at this.
I mean, one thing I would say is when you get into one of those, you know, 18-17s or even last week, it was only 15-10, but there were times where both teams were unstoppable. When you're the defense in a situation like that and you know that this game isn't going to be 6-5, so you have some margin for error, how hard is it to, you know, say, okay, for the last 10 minutes we gave up 6 goals, but for the next 10 we have to forget that and we have to give up no goals or we have to give up 1 goal because we're matching them. But, like, how hard is it to play defense in a game that gets to be that high scoring or to be a goalie?
I mean, I think, look, I've always looked at the, you know, I always take it from the perspective of a goalie. I mean, it's a position of failure. You know, you're in there and you're going to fail at some point. You're probably going to fail maybe 15 times in a game, and that's kind of what you just referenced. And I think defensively, you know, you kind of have to approach it the same way. I think you'd like to come out and say, hey, we're not getting scored on this game. But in a 60-minute game, that's just unrealistic. So, you know, we preach next play. We preach mini games. We preach kind of one play at a time, one possession at a time, and really be able to wipe it and get the short-term memory. And I think our guys have kind of embraced it a little bit. It's still a long way to go there.
All right, I'll leave you with two things about Sours, okay? If you go back 27 seasons, it takes you to the 1992 championship season. Of those 27 years, 22 times, if you had 45 points, you were either first or second on the team in scoring. And 11 of those times, 45 points led the team in scoring in the last 27 years, including 3 of our 6 NCAA championship teams. Sours has 45 points in his last 5 games.
Yeah.
And this is even more ridiculous to me. Sours, in 27 career games, already has more career assists than Tom Schreiber. That's ridiculous to me.
They are. And again, we're running two very different offenses.
Yes,
you know,
but
Tom wasn't quarterbacking it.
And he's a mini.
Yeah, as much as Michael was. But no, those are crazy facts. I mean, you know how fond we are of our 22 and all 22s that have come through here, especially Schreibs. And,
right, but you think of Schreiber, like he's one of the greatest passers ever to play lacrosse.
He still is.
Right, exactly.
He's outstanding. And what those guys do what those guys do better than anyone else is they put it right on the ear. I mean, they put it right in the breadbasket in terms of how they make their feeds. And that allows them to truly make other people better.
Somebody made the comment that watching Sours feed the ball, it's like, and you know, you'll get this in another year or so when you try to play catch with Waverly. When you play catch with like a little kid, you're not playing catch with them. You're trying to throw the ball in a position where it will hit them in the hand and stick. So that's what it's like watching Sours feed. And I'm assuming it's the same as watching Teat feed.
Yeah, they're both really special players. It'll be a good matchup. We're looking forward to it.
So it's Princeton Cornell. That's 1 o'clock on Saturday. You know, a lot on the line for both teams. You and I will be back next week talking hopefully about Princeton looking ahead to the Ivy League tournament.
If not,
we'll be looking, back at the year and ahead to next year, but we'll see how this weekend plays out. The game is 1 o'clock. Cookie Krongard being honored at halftime. Should be a lot of alums there. And the weather's supposed to be great. So if you're in the area, it'd be great if you get out. And if not, we thank you for your support of Princeton Tiger men's lacrosse. And we look forward to reporting back to you next week. Coach, thanks for being here.
Thank you, and go Tigers.